Things change rather quickly, don't they? If you know what I'm talking about, of course, on Friday, the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade and the Casey cases and essentially ended the federal mandate for abortion. It's a wonderful thing to rejoice in, absolutely. And I just want to just encourage everyone and thank everyone who, over these years, nearly 50 years, who have labored tirelessly, and you know, sometimes maybe not without a little bit of despair, but have consistently pushed back against this and advocated for life. There are many people in this parish. There are at least, I think, three members of the parish that are also members of the Southwest Indiana Right to Life Board, and of course the director of the Southwest Indiana Right to Life is also a parishioner, but then countless of you have been supportive of that, and this is such a pro-life parish, and I mean, ideally I think we should say that all of our parishes would be pro-life, but this one kind of stands out above and beyond the rest, I think. I'm impartial, of course. It's something most definitely to rejoice in. But then also, as we are exhorted in our first reading in our gospel, you know, not to look back after putting our hands to the plow, because there's still a lot to go. That was a huge quarry stone right in the middle of the road to honoring human life and the dignity of human life. But there are other obstacles down the road, and we certainly need to work on those. I cannot remember who it was that said this initially. I'll have to look that up later. But the idea, of course, is that our work is really not truly completed in the form of advocating for life until abortion is not only illegal, not just illegal, but unthinkable. It must be unthinkable for that to find itself, that idea of abortion to find itself a home in a human heart. This is a great victory, though. It's a great victory for not only the unborn, but also for their mothers and those who have felt like or were made to feel like they only had recourse to that action, to that error, to that sin of abortion. You know, that's one thing that another thing that I'm very proud of this parish for. You know, that the accusation oftentimes toward people that are pro-life is, well, you just care about the child, you don't care about the woman. Well, nothing could be further from the truth, of course. We care about both of them, and that is why, because abortion destroys not just one life, but two lives. One is just a little more subtle in its destruction. It's internal. It eats at the soul. It eats at the psyche of a woman. We should defend women from that, absolutely. But really, this parish is so good at not only advocating for the right of the unborn to live, but also attending to the needs of women who find themselves in compromising situations in a pregnancy. We have two groups here that run out of this parish, Gabriel Project, and also we have many contributors here to Project Rachel. The first, of course, gives real material assistance to women who are either impoverished or single mothers, expectant mothers. And then, of course, Project Rachel is meant to help to effect some healing in the souls and the hearts of women who are post-abortive. So, again, we should consistently keep working in those avenues, most definitely. Also, of course, there's always the political sphere as well. So please, now that this thing is kicked back to the states, let's do what we can to encourage our lawmakers to make sure that this heinous practice no longer finds a home here in the state of Indiana. It was a joy of mine to be able to go on the March for Life. I hadn't been for some years, but I went this last January. Who knew that it would be the last one before Roe v. Wade was overturned? Some people had suspicions. We had hopes, of course, but here it is. Somebody was sharing with me on Friday, once we found out that now we can go, we got to pick the state that we go to now and to advocate for the right to life of the unborn. So again, we're not done yet. We're not done yet. There's plenty of work to do, but certainly let's take that moment to rejoice and thank God for that blessing. The thing that I also wanted to really concentrate on is not just that this happened, but when it happened. And I think we can see in that, once I explain myself a little bit, how close God is to us. I'm sure that over the last nearly 50 years, two generations, those who advocated for life found themselves a little bit discouraged. Why, O Lord? Why, O Lord, are you taking so long? You know, all the prayers, all the advocacy, all of the hard work and dedication and yes, even persecution that people endured and went through to make this happen. I'm sure at times it was a little discouraging, more than a little. And yet, let's consider a couple of things. So this came down on Friday. This came down in the midst of essentially the 50th year. What is the significance of the number 50? Well, in the Old Testament sense, 50 was the time of Jubilee, the year of Jubilee. Every 50 years, there would be 49 years of more or less business as usual, everybody going about their lives and their interactions with one another, their business dealings, all of that. And then on the 50th year, there would be the time of Jubilee. All debts were forgiven between one another, and it was a time of celebration of the whole nation of Israel. When I think God has given us this year of Jubilee, after 50 years, to cancel out this scourge of the sin of abortion, or at least the beginning of the cancellation of it. So the Lord is, I think, once again, giving us this Jubilee year. These things don't happen by accident. And not only that, but the day on which it fell. Now, if you know anything about the Roman calendar, there's saints that are celebrated on particular dates on the calendar. So, John the Baptist would have been celebrated this year on Friday. Now, it got moved to Thursday because there was another feast that was going to fall on that day. A movable feast, one that doesn't always fall on the same date. And that is, of course, the solemnity of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Those coincided. They don't do that very often at all. They coincided on that same day that Roe fell. What does this say to us? Why those two solemnities? Well, I think, one, the Nativity of St. John the Baptist. If we recall that beautiful scene of the visitation of Mary to Elizabeth, what is it that John the Baptist does? Even as he is 6 months gestating in Elizabeth, his mother, he leaps in joy for the newly conceived Jesus who is in Mary's womb. As she comes and greets Elizabeth, he leaps just as he dances, just as King David danced in front of the ark as he brought the Ark of the Covenant up into the city of God. That rejoicing in the presence of this newly conceived Jesus testifies to the sanctity of life and indeed the beginning of human life and the beginning of the human person at conception. Testifies to that. And so I think it's fitting that when we celebrate the birth of John the Baptist, this great saint who is not only the herald of the Messiah, but also the one who rejoices at the newly conceived Messiah, testifying to our great dignity now as human beings because God has chosen to take on our own nature. The second thing, of course, is the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And Jesus shows his great closeness to us in revealing this image of his Sacred Heart. He burns in love for humanity. He is willing to suffer the crown of thorns and the piercing of the lance for our sake. And so I think God is also saying to us, He has not been deaf to our cries. He has not been deaf to the cries of the innocent. But also, he shows that his great love and his great solicitude and his providence is always with us. So I think in the when this was handed down is just a great sign of God's mercy for us and his great love for humanity. And he means to encourage us to continue to have our hands on the plow. So as we think about that, and also we ought to really, again, I think our tendency as human beings is to see those who are adversaries as enemies. Well, there's only, you know, one rank of enemies, and that is, of course, the infernal realm, you know, Satan and his minions, who have so deceived souls that he has brought them into his sway. He has brought them into a way of approaching life that is antithetical to God and antithetical to their own dignity. And so when we see advocates for abortion, and again, there's going to be, as have already been and will be, demonstrations of vile hatred. We should not see that hatred as coming from those human beings, but its origin is far more shadowy and sinister, and that he has deceived them. We should have mercy. We should have mercy. In our gospel today, of course, our boy St. John, he asks, Lord, should we call down fire upon these people who will not receive you, who have declared themselves to be enemies of you? And he rebukes them, and they move along. He rebukes them. He does not wish us to villainize. Yes, we should always stand against evil. Yes, we should always thwart the actions of people who cooperate with evil. But we should not be so blind to the will of God and his love for humanity that we would make them the ultimate enemy. We want their conversion. We want their healing. We want their brotherhood and their sisterhood. We want their salvation. So let's always remember that as well as we carry forth this great battle that we are a part of. God is the ultimate victor. We know this, and we should take encouragement from this. And in all the things that we do, in all the ways in which we strive to be disciples of Christ, let us always remember that truth, that he is always with us, and he is victorious. Let us stand now and profess our faith.